Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Victoria.
And we've set out to review the UK's most popular cookbooks, those that you probably have at home and haven't opened in a while. We take one cookbook each episode to cook from and to stress test, digging out their best recipes, bringing them to life again, and hopefully inspiring you to do so too. Hello, Victoria.
Hi, Hannah. How are you?
Sorry. I know I'm under like contractual obligation to sing everything.
I love it. Could you sing your dishes later?
Sure. Yeah, no problem.
You're in French.
Not in French.
En français.
That's my favorite Simpsons episode. Do you know that Simpsons episode where?
Which one?
Where
they sing in French.
Where, yeah, they say something in for, they're all in class and the teachers, they all laugh at something. And she goes, en français, s'il vous plaît. And they all go, hop, 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 hop. That's not going to translate to audio. But anyway.
No, I thought you did your French laugh very well.
Thank you. And my niche talents on my CV. Dolphin noises and French laughing. Wow, we digress. What have you been looking at, loving, envying, thinking?
So, I have a bit of a, maybe, perhaps a bit of a niche thing to talk about today.
Oh, yeah. We don't like them at all. As opposed to dolphin noises and French laughing.
You know, there's a lot of dolphins in the world, a lot of French people in the world. So, you know how the world is bad.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very, very bad.
The world's rough at the moment, and my world is particularly stressful for a number of reasons. And so, I'm trying to find joy in various places. It's quite difficult because the world is on fire.
Yeah.
And my life sometimes feels like it's on fire.
Outside of the podcast, surely.
Yeah, yeah. Outside of the podcast. My microphone is doing just great. It's very cool. So what I found brings me a lot of joy is a little TV show called Ted Lasso.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah. It brings me so much joy. And I knew that I think I knew that you hadn't been watching.
No,
it.
I haven't watched it.
It's on Apple TV and it's in its second season and it's not food related at all, but you'll see where I'm going. So it's about an American guy who comes to the UK to manage a football team. The chairman of a football team, a soccer team, English football, not American football, hires him as a revenge thing. Anyway, it sounds like, I don't like explaining it to people because it sounds shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so good and it's so like wholesome and good. And it's not, you know, we all have a high drama and a true crime and all that crap, right? But it's just, I cry every time because everybody in it is just so good. And it's all just like, it's so nice. Oh. And, you know, it's not like, you know, watching Bob the Builder. Like it's very like, it's got some good themes and the characters are great.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful. Comes out on a Friday, you know, you've had a shitty week.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, right, I'm just going to go and like lose myself in the world of Ted Lasso. And anyway, something happened in the one this week and I was like, I've just been like a bit like, oh, thinking about it all weekend. So there's a plot line where Ted, who's the coach, brings his boss, the chairman of the football team, biscuits every day.
Right. Actual biscuits or like American biscuits?
No, like they're like little shortbreads.
Right.
In a little pink box, and she goes crazy for them.
Okay.
And it turns out he's making them every day for her, and she loves them. And anyway, so I made them.
You made
to make myself happy. Yeah. Because I kept seeing the recipe, like, you know, people talking about the recipe, and I saw it on TikTok, people were coming up, and I was like, I want to make the Ted Lasso biscuits.
Oh my God.
So I made them today.
Oh my God, they look so good.
They're like a little shortbread.
And you have previously said that the only way you're willing to eat shortbread is if it's just you've baked it yourself or someone's baked it and it's fresh out the oven, right?
It's fresh, yeah. And so they're sitting next to me and I've been chomping down on them. And it's such a simple recipe. But what I thought was interesting about the recipe, I don't know if this is an American thing or maybe this is just how you make shortbread, I don't know. Mm. But it's with icing sugar.
Is it?
Is that normal?
No, I feel like when I've made it before, I don't think it's always been icing sugar. I think I've made Paul Hollywood's version.
Is there a bigger Paul Hollywood stan than you? Honestly. I feel
like... Oh my God! There is... are many. I would hope there are fucking many. No, he like uses a lot of your go-to recipe. No, you know what? For bread, most bread things, I go to Paul Hollywood because I think he actually knows like a lot about like yeast. Bread baking. Oh God, don't do it.
No, I his focaccia recipe is also my go-to recipe.
There you go. Right.
I feel like a lot of your go-to recipes are for Hollywood, and that's fine.
Can we move back to the shortbread now?
Yeah.
No, he didn't. So, that one that I used had caster sugar, not icing sugar. So
yeah, so this goes one step further and uses icing sugar or confectioner's sugar if you're American. And it just means that the dough is, it just feels like Play-Doh.
Yes, yeah, yeah. How is it?
It's good. It's very buttery, but shortbread is. It's got like 8 ounces of butter in it.
Right.
I did it American style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although I can't get sticks of butter, I managed to get 8 ounces of butter, which is a lot. It's almost a whole block.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 2 cups of flour. That's literally all it is. Like butter, you cream that up with the confectioner's sugar, icing sugar, like 3/4 of a cup of that, 2 things of flour, a little bit of salt, that is it.
Wow.
And then just like pat it down into a baking tray and then cook it for like 45 minutes. And it's so good. And it just, you know, it's cute. Yeah, this is the official Apple TV recipe that I found on kitchen.com.
It's good to know because that is the kind of thing that you could literally make just with stuff you have at home, right? That's comforting.
So, yeah, exactly. Like you just you have all those things in your house. And yeah, it means that the dough is like, it feels easy to like put it into its, yeah.
Interesting. I think there's like a whole series for us in TV recipes or movie recipes. That would be so good.
Yeah, I think so. Or like mini-sodes and stuff. But yeah, watch Ted Lasso. This isn't, you know, this episode isn't sponsored by Apple TV, but like it's so good and it just makes me so happy. But you don't have to like football to watch it. That's my thing. Don't think that you have to. It's not really about that.
Okay. I'm sold.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my...
That's your hot tip of the week.
That's my hot tip of the week. Shortbread and Ted Lasso. What a dream. What a dream evening.
But... That's not what we're here to talk about.
That's not what we're here to talk about. I like this transition. We've just gone to the front of this. Someone says, but loudly. And that's how we transition into the book of the week.
It's the ultimate obvious segue. Just like interrupt and be rude.
However,
I think you'll find the book that we're talking about today is another classique from...
Oh, classique. En français.
By a very well-known and loved chef called Elizabeth David.
Woohoo!
And this is Provincial French Cooking.
Provincial
Cooking.
Preferential. Provincial. Preventative.
Prevent your French cooking. Before we get to that, I will remind you what we do here, which is Vic and I took all the best cookbook lists.
What do we do?
Never know.
We make shortbread.
No. We took all the lists online of the best cookbooks ever, put them into one big old master list. Vic is now eating a shortbread and making me hungry. And took the top books on that list, so the most mentioned bunch of cookbooks and we cook from them and we discuss them and we rate them. So
we do.
Oh, she's off mute now. She's back. Shall I tell you a little bit about Elizabeth David?
Yes. I don't know very much about her, I'll be honest. I know that she's, you know, kind of a big deal, but that...
She is a big deal. And now I see why. So, like, I think sometimes when we do this bit where we research the chefs, it can be hard to find out anything interesting or, like, juicy. Well, with Elizabeth David, that is not the case. Someone needs to make a film or like a, I can see like a BBC short series about Elizabeth David because she sounds great. Disclaimer, I'm not going to be able to cover everything because there's actually just loads of interesting interviews and profiles and stuff about her online. And I would recommend that everyone looks her up if you're interested. I actually ordered her biography. Right,
did
this
you?
Morning when I was researching her, because I was like, shit, she sounds interesting. This
I
sounds
was just
so going
to say, is there a biography?
Yeah, there's a couple by the sounds of it. When I was growing up, I think I said at the end of the last episode, but she was always on my mum's cookbook shelf, and I know my mum has a lot of love for her, so I'll probably end up mentioning her a bit. But yeah, this is why I still felt like I didn't know that much about her, so this is why it's interesting. Let me tell you why it's interesting.
I want to hear.
So Elizabeth David was born in 1913, so we're throwing it back quite a bit, and she passed away in 1992, but she wasn't born Elizabeth David, she was born Elizabeth Gwynne. I couldn't find, I'm sure there is somewhere, but I couldn't find why she changed her name or why it was to David, but maybe one of our lovely listeners can pass that one along.
That is very similar to your surname. Is she your actual mum?
Gwyn. Gwyn and Quinn. Yeah, this is, I'm outed now. This, I'm from the long Gwyn lineage.
Gwyn lineage. Don't say that 10 times.
This is why you'll see I'm not related to her, was that she was born to an upper class family.
Ah, yeah.
I think that comes across in her writing, right? She's very eloquent, quite proper in how she speaks.
Yeah.
And apparently was quite pedantic, but we'll get back to that later. Her dad was a Conservative MP for Eastbourne. Okay. Yes, we'll refrain commenting on that. This is what I mean. She had a great life. It seems like she went off at like age 16 to Paris to study in the Sorbonne, to study art in the 30s. I think she was in France a couple of times from what I can tell. But at one point she kind of ran off with this married man. She has a lot of affairs and a lot of, I've never read the word lover so much as when I was doing this research on her. And I mean, I would fucking die if anyone said that word now, but of a period, that word is like, great. I took a lover.
Is she sexy woman?
She, yes, by all accounts, was a very attractive woman. And so, she quite an interesting love life. So she ran off with a married man and then she sailed with him in a small boat to Italy.
Is that nursery rhyme?
And there was an owl and there was a pussycat.
Some honey.
But this was all while Second World War was kicking off, right? So they were actually it's just casually mentions in a few pieces that she and the guy were just interned for a while in Italy, no big deal, and their boat was impounded and they lost loads of their stuff. They managed to get out of Italy and they went to Greece at one point, where they were nearly trapped by the German invasion in 1941. So there was just loads of war drama going on as her and her lover, her married lover, are just like fleeing around Europe. Like, it's just so juicy. I love it. And then they managed to escape to Egypt, where they parted ways. I think that one didn't work out. And that's a running theme. It seems like she has a lot of lovers. Right. It doesn't always go so well. So then she starts working for the British government in Cairo. She's running a library there. And she married while she was there, but that one didn't last that long. And I think it was with this husband that she moved to New Delhi in 1944.
Okay.
Yeah, so she's just flitting around the place. She didn't love India, by the sounds of it.
Okay.
Which, yeah, because I was surprised to see India in there, because I haven't heard much about her with Indian cooking, and maybe, yeah, that wasn't her vibe. Anyway, so In 1946, she returns to England. After being in France and Italy and Greece and Egypt, she's just like so disappointed by the food in Britain because rationing is still in place. You're laughing because you're like, yeah, mate, it hasn't changed same. That much. But like, but back in the day, like in 46, rationing was still heavily in place and she was just despairing a little bit. I was asking my mum about this as well and like why she loved Elizabeth David so much. And my mum was born in Malta and lived there for the first few years of her life. And she had a similar thing. Was so even though it was later on in like the 50s, I still think like rationing and lack of food choice was like a major thing. This comes up again and again. It's what like why people love Elizabeth David. And it's like she reinvigorated the whole kind of food scene because everyone was just despairing a bit at how shit, what shit produce they were getting. Produce. So,
produce.
So she starts writing in Harper's Bazaar about Mediterranean cooking. And she was a food journalist all throughout the year. She worked for Sunday Times, Vogue, Spectator, Tatler. Uh-huh. Yeah, just like a bloody great like food writing career. And then in 1950, at the age of 36, she published her first book, which was a book of Mediterranean food. And then this later was followed by like some French books, French, Italian, and even English cuisine, which I'd be quite interested to see what the English book is like, because
yeah, I thought that as well when I saw that she'd done some on English food. It's just like, don't bother. So it's simplified.
So her kind of ethos is that she doesn't like overly elaborate food. She likes quite simplistic. Yeah. She apparently despaired quite openly about how the English made pizzas. That she always complained about that a lot. Yeah, so in 1965, she actually opened a shop in Pimlico.
Of course.
That sold kitchen equipment.
Fun!
I think they fell out in 1973, whoever she opened the shop with, but it continued to trade under her name. But apparently she really liked being a shopkeeper and it was like a welcome break from writing, and she used to love like interacting with people and stuff. And then if people came in looking for a certain piece of equipment, she was like often heard to say, if you could come back, then I think I have one at home. And she would just like bring stuff from what? Home and just like bring it to people because she was really generous and loved sharing all her kind of niche food. Food equipment. I know. My mum actually went to that shop, she said, which I'm quite jealous of. I would love to have gone as well. It sounds bloody great.
Not enough kitchen supply stores in the world, I don't think.
No. There are. There's loads in Paris and they're great, but they're just so expensive. Or if you even think of like the one at Borough Market that has loads of great so cookery expensive. Stuff. It's just not accessible, which is really not fun.
Yeah, I went to one in Paris last year and they're so fun just to walk around. And
they're just beautiful. Yeah, so my mum actually found this piece from 1986 from The Observer in one of her old copies of the books, and it was called Founder of the Food Revolution. And she'd just been made CBE in the New Year's Honours, and she'd received OBE in 1976. There's kind of a bit that's saying like she should have been made a Dame. It was tragic that she wasn't, but a quote in that article said, it's hard to credit today how exciting and inspiring the writing of Mrs. David seemed to a war generation starved of good food and ingredients for over 10 years. Anyway, to wrap up about Elizabeth David, one of her like best mates is our friend Hoppy, Simon Hopkinson.
No way! But their vibes are very different.
Well, I don't know. So
apart from, you know, France.
There's a whole piece on The Observer about how they were really close and that they first met at his restaurant Hilaire, and he made like this consommé with prawn shells, and she ordered more, which he was thrilled by. And he came out he had her book, An Omelette and a Glass of Wine, and he asked her to sign it for him, and then they became friends. He actually cooked at her funeral, which is mad. So he was just like, they got really, really close. Apparently a big fan of wine, and by all accounts not an easy person. So this is something that like comes across in loads of the profiles of her. There's a quote in this that says, if you didn't agree with her, those little beady eyes would pop right open. She could be vociferous. She could be pedantic too. My thing, this is Simon Hopkinson talking about her, my thing about crisp and crispy, because he loathes the latter word, came from her in the beginning. She pointed it out one day, the fact that the extra Y is completely unnecessary, and I thought, yes, you're right. And she was so learned and intelligent. So she just comes across as just this very strong, independent, great woman. Anyway, this book, French Provincial Cooking, was first published in 1960, and who it was dedicated to was Peter Higgins, who she also had an affair with.
Oh.
The affair ended in 1963. So at least he got a good 3 years out of that dedication to the book before it all went wrong. When you look at kind of the list that this ends up on, loads of them say that it should be kind of approached and read as like a series of short stories. Like it looks like a novel, doesn't it? Like it's not...
Yeah, it's
dense. It's dense. There's not many pictures. It's a bit like Julia Child-esque. It's just like pages and pages of recipes and stories about... Yeah, so this whole book is like a celebration of French regional cooking. She has a section at the beginning that's like the cookery of the French provinces, and it goes through like Provence and Brittany and Paris and all the different places and talks about that. But interestingly, it appears in like Nigel Slater's top five books. And when he's talking about it, he says one of the things that very few people don't dare to mention about Elizabeth David is that some of her recipes don't work. It's heresy to say so, but they don't. She was quite bad tempered, but she wrote magically. But I thought that was so interesting because... I definitely see how some of these recipes couldn't work because she's not that like, she's not that measured. She's not that emphatic about how to do certain things. It's just kind of like, put this here and add this there. Yeah. And it's very much like instinct led, which I guess like that came of a different time, the very like measured approach. But she is just quite loose in her instructions. So I can see how like some of it might have gone a bit wrong.
And I feel like there's a lot of caveats sometimes in the recipes, right? Especially in the ones I made, like there's like, here's the recipe, but if you don't do this right, then it'll go completely wrong, and like you probably need to make this a few times to get it exactly right. But she doesn't ever tell you what exactly right means.
So
I get that.
It is hard, isn't it? Like, I mean, with these older books, without the pictures and all that stuff, you don't really know what you're aiming for sometimes. I did really like in the back this kind of the section on cookery books. There's like a chapter at the back. I don't know if you saw that. And she credits her favourite books. It's right before the bibliography. And then I thought she includes this quote, which like, for myself, I like those books which are not too complicated and which suggest ideas rather than being minutely detailed handbooks. And that quote is from someone else, but it just like shows how she doesn't really go in for like tons of detail and tons of instruction either.
Yeah, I feel like she says that at the beginning, right? There's like a preface or something like that says she's talking about simple cooking and how simple doesn't mean easy or doesn't mean like untechnical or like you just throw everything in. It's just a case of like boiling something down to like, what's this recipe's like core ingredients and like, do you need more? Because, you know, figuring out for yourself, like, what is it that you like about a recipe?
Yes. There's one recipe in here that's like a rice and tomato salad thing. And it's just like, literally make rice. She drains it in a colander, which is controversial.
Very.
And I think you just season it. Then you skin some tomatoes and you slice them and you put them on top of the rice. And that's the salad. And she talks about eating it as like a vegetable main. And I was curious to eat it because I was just like, I nearly made it. But I was just like, on paper, this does not sound great.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like I want to eat it, really.
Yeah, but maybe it was in the seasoning or something. I don't know. What were like your first impressions? Did you find it hard to figure out what you wanted to cook?
Yeah, I did. I feel like I went all the way through it once and I was like, wow, I've turned no pages over. I've made those sticky notes. But I think that is because it's like you said, like a lot of it's very simple. It's very like, and I think I was, you know, I've been burned before with our French books where everything seems very serious and full of butter and full of cream and like I, you know, I'm not in a place where I want to do anything more with that. And so I think I was a bit defensive about what I wanted to do. But, and I'll talk a little bit about how I chose my recipes and how I got to them. But like, but then I kind of just relaxed a bit into it because things were like simple and I think, right, I'm not going to be working really hard here, but this is a very well respected cookbook.
Yeah.
So I've got to give it the opportunity.
That's it.
Yeah. I wanted to give it a chance because it's like, there is the classic French things in there.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, like you said, rice and tomatoes.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Load of soups.
Lot of soups.
A lot of vegetables, actually.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Lots of eggs and stuff as well.
Yeah.
Poached eggs and different types of omelets. It's, again, it's just another of these books that, like, it's hard for us to judge now because we weren't there. But you can imagine that, like,
if people were eating just like really bleak things. Like one of the pieces I read about her, the writer had gone to read some wartime cookbooks or like some rationing cookbooks to understand, and there was things like crow that people were eating just because they were so desperate. So if you're coming from that kind of place of absolute shit.
Yeah.
And then you're reading about beautiful, colourful, delicious Mediterranean and French food. Like, it must have been, yeah, revolutionary.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, in 50 years, 100 years, when our ancestors are doing, like, cookbook circles about cookbooks of this day, like, maybe this is how they'll talk about Nigel Slater.
Yeah.
When, you know, like, figs are extinct or something, or, like, you know. Yeah. Brexit has meant that the UK no longer has any fresh produce.
Everyone's eating that. Like, what's that weird shit that people put? Huel.
Yeah.
What is that?
Everyone's just drinking like powdered milkshakes.
Oh my God.
For energy. Because nobody sits down to eat anymore. That's weird. But everyone will be reading Nigel Slater books like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, this is so weird. Like, why would you eat like this? And maybe that's how.
So
not that Elizabeth David's food is weird, but like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, wow, there's no chemicals in this. What does that mean? Yeah. Like, how do people live?
Oh, gross. What did you cook?
So I cooked two things. But enjoyed baking them both, actually. Both felt very simple. So the first one was, I'm not going to say it in French, it's the cream of tomato and potato soup.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, who doesn't love a soup? And, you know, it's August, so it's basically winter. and I feel like I say that every episode. I say how cold it is every episode. We just haven't had a summer in the UK. Anyway, it's fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine. It's a soup. It's cream. It has cream in it because it's, you know, French. I don't know why it's called tomato and potato soup when leeks feature heavily.
Oh, really?
As well. Like, that's got big leek energy in it. and not that much tomato in comparison to the leeks I found and potatoes. Yeah. But anyway, I picked it because it's tomato season, baby. And I was like, you know, there's tomatoes everywhere, like good, fresh, good tomatoes. I was like, we can
there's
make a
soup. Tomato mention of the episode. Yeah. We like ripe tomatoes, don't we, Vic?
Yeah, we like ripe, delicious tomatoes that actually taste like something. My funny anecdote from this week, from cooking for this, for everything, is that my local produce shop that I go to doesn't have any scales. So all the food's outside, doesn't have any scales. And so tomatoes and courgettes in my next thing feature heavily. And so I knew how much I needed total weight-wise, but I just had to guess. So I came home with a lot of excess tomatoes and courgettes, because what I've learned is my estimates aren't great. Estigrate, no.
Oh my God.
So I had so much excess fucking tomatoes and courgettes, which is fine because we love tomatoes when they're ripe and in season.
and there's a lot of them in this book as well,
aren't
there?
Yeah. What happened? So, also, as we know, I don't have potatoes. I don't eat potatoes at home, really.
Yes.
So I had to acquire some potatoes, but...
I had to acquire some potatoes.
Also something that I feel like supermarkets, they taste like shit, right? Give me potatoes that taste like something.
Maris Pipers are your boy.
Well, here's what I did. Let me tell you about my potatoes. Our girl, Georgina Hayden, who we love.
We do.
Greek Cypriot chef who lives in the UK, and she'd been on TV basically that morning, and I've heard her talk about Cypress potatoes before, and I was like, I'm gonna go find some fucking Cypress potatoes for this recipe, because she was like hyping them up, and then she was talking about them on Instagram, and I was like, I trust you basically with my life, Georgina Hayden, so I'm gonna go and find some Cypress potatoes. So I had Cypress potatoes, I had tomatoes, I had leeks, I had cream, I had water, I had a pan. you cook up the leeks. I would say you would sweat them. She didn't use the word. She didn't use the verb sweat in them. But she does say that the success of this recipe banks on you not fucking the leeks up. Basically, shouldn't use those words.
That would be very uncouth for Elizabeth.
But that's basically what she was saying. Like, if you let them cook too much, or they're basically just supposed to like melt. I think she uses the verb melt. Leeks don't melt. But I would say sweat. So I feel like I did all right with that. And then you chop up the tomatoes and potatoes. And I think this comes up a lot. You cook the tomatoes until they've just released their juices.
Is this the salty as the summer sea of this book?
It's salty, yeah. literally that, and there. So just those three things. Or you cook them up for a little bit, then you add some water to cover that up. Come and bring it to a boil, let it simmer for about half an hour, and then of course you send it through the food mill.
Oh,
I've lent my food mill out to my neighbour, so I just used
what
it.
What the hell is a food mill?
I think it's exactly what it sounds like. Like a,
I don't know,
a pre-electricity food processor.
That's really tickled me. I read about her, she had a servant as well, so, which I think she,
of course,
yeah, she, I thought she brought him or them everywhere. So this, maybe she got the servant to bring it to the food mill or to put it to the food mill.
Twice if necessary, you have to put it in the
Wow.
I used a stick blender.
Yeah. Yeah. She would have approved, I think.
And then you add some cream. She says that you should make sure that you bring, if the cream is cold or if your house is cold or whatever, you should bring the soup to the boil first so it doesn't curdle.
Yeah,
it was good. She says that it should only be as thick as a thin cream.
Oh.
Which I was like,
it's a bit wash.
It's got potatoes
in
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I got it as smooth as I possibly could, but I didn't sit there making it like watery, because who wants a watery soup? Heinz would not make a watery soup, you know, a cream of tomato watery soup. It was good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Nice.
Yeah, it was very reminiscent of Heinz. I don't think it was tomato-y enough.
Yes.
For a tomato soup. But the leeks definitely like added to it, I thought.
What would you rename this soup if you could rename it as anything? A vegetable soup or like
leek and potato soup with tomatoes.
Inspired. I love it.
Cream of leek and potato soup with tomato. It was hearty.
Hearty.
It felt hearty for a soup. Yeah. And I don't know if that was the cream or the potatoes or both.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun, again, like simple soup recipe.
Cool.
Yeah, that was it. So that was number one. So that's not very exciting. I feel like it's not a very exciting week for me in terms of cooking. But the next thing I made, I really, really liked. Spoiler alert. It was a fun one. So my second one, I wonder if we might have done something the same. One we might have done. But I don't know, because I said courgettes earlier and I don't know if... Have you done something with courgettes?
I have done something with courgettes. Okay. How do you know I've done something with
courgettes?
I don't know.
Here's how I got to this recipe, and then I'll tell you why I think that we might have done the same one.
Right.
So, as I said, I went through it, the book, when I first got it, and I was like, what am I going to fucking cook? Wasn't very inspired. Went through it again, picked the soup, and I was like, I don't know what else to do. Like, all the meat stuff just didn't seem very, like, exciting. Or things that I would really want to eat. So in true millennial fashion, I went on Instagram and searched for hashtag Elizabeth David.
Oh, nice.
And
good work.
This recipe came up again and again in between lots of her Mediterranean cooking, which I was like a bit sad about. The lists came up with this book rather than some of her Mediterranean stuff, which I really would like to have tried because it looked amazing. So I might seek some of those recipes out. But people were posting about this and it looked great and people kept saying it was their favourite Elizabeth David recipe ever. And I was like, well, now I have to try
it.
And it's the gratin of courgette and tomatoes, the baked courgette and tomatoes. Have you done that
nice.
One?
Nice. No, that's not what I did.
Phew!
But I did do something with courgettes. Oh, nice. This is going to be a courgette heavy episode.
I feel like she does wonders for them. They're not particularly an exciting vegetable, but... mine at least, it was great by the end of it.
So it's almost like a ratatouille-esque thing then, is it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It's not ratatouille.
Yeah, no,
calm your jets, don't worry. It's funny, like she says that it's great and she says that it's time consuming, but I didn't think it took, you know, I mean, I don't know if my world is skewed after doing this podcast and some of the stuff, but it didn't feel that time consuming. It all felt, again, I think there's a difference between time consuming and hard and time consuming and simple or easy.
Yeah.
So it's quite a big recipe. 2 pounds of courgettes.
Whoa.
And 1 pound of tomatoes.
Did you have that just left over from your shop visit where you meant to get like one?
I could have made it again based on what I bought from the fucking shop. So you roughly kind of peel the courgettes, so you leave some kind of green coming through, and you're supposed to peel the tomatoes, but you know, fuck that. I didn't do that. I'll be honest. Because I saw that you're chopping them up, right? Like, and they're cooking them. Like,
I
wouldn't
point?
Do it even if you weren't. Like, no. You get the courgettes, you slice them up, salt them, put them in a colander, let them to like drain for a bit.
Yeah, she likes that.
Yeah. Then after a while, you get them in a tea towel and dry them off. Get them as dry as possible, basically, is the aim. She calls this out, actually, in the recipe about how this only butter is used as, like, your oil and, like, flavouring, really.
Yeah.
It's a lot of butter. But you basically then fry in batches the courgettes in some butter until they're kind of translucent. After you've done that, you add more butter to your pan. Add the tomatoes, some garlic, some parsley, which is... key for this book. It's in every fucking recipe, every single one. Parsley. And what I found is it's actually quite hard to find like normal curly parsley, right? Compared to flat leaf these
flat
days.
Leaf is a the main market dominator.
I'll be honest, I think I used flat leaf in this, so I don't think I could find curly. I should just grow it, but I'm lazy and bad at things. So
does she specify what the difference, like that you should use curly parsley? No,
but I just presumed because, you know,
curly's the OG.
The European OG, I would guess. But so tomato, garlic, parsley. But here's her, like, another one of her panicky little statements where she says, you probably need to make this dish a few times because it's very difficult to get this bit to the consistency that is right. Where it's not too dry and not too wet. And she says it needs to be like a thickish puree.
Right.
And if it's too watery, she says it's amateurish. This dish tastes amateurish.
Ooh.
So I was like, I'll fuck you up, David. I'll make this perfect.
This lady knew her mind, knew her opinions.
So I was worried because I was like, oh, if it goes too... I mean, I had lots more tomatoes, so it's all right. I could have added more tomatoes.
You've been eating her for a week now, so you've really nailed it.
I feel like I did all right. And so then you pour the tomato mixture into the gratin dish and kind of like, she says amalgamate, like, so just mix it all up. And it's supposed to fill the dish. And it did, because it's a lot, that's a lot of courgettes, £2 worth of courgettes. And then you add breadcrumbs on top.
Oh, nice.
And then you get your butter.
Your
butter's back. And you just put blobs of butter all over the top.
That just makes everything better.
It really did. And then you pop it in the oven to bake.
Nice.
I think about half an hour, I can't remember. And it comes out, it makes your house smell like butter, which is quite nice. Like a bit like the shortbread, actually, today.
Yeah.
Your house smell like warm butter. But it's so nice.
Really?
Yeah, it was really, I ate it because it's quite big and my husband wasn't interested at all. He doesn't like courgettes. But I ate it for a couple of days in a row and I like re-baked it on the second day. Like, I don't know, I guess it's the butter, but like the courgettes like tasted like something. The tomatoes really added to it. It's nice with that crunchy breadcrumb topping. Like it would be the perfect side dish.
Yes.
She says like it goes with lamb.
Right.
It was really good and I would absolutely make it again.
I guess because everything's in season, so they have that extra flavor.
Yeah, they already have taste.
Yeah.
And then you're adding butter to it, which like brings out the taste. I would recommend. And so I agree with people that say that's a great recipe on Instagram. And we'll be adding to that one. Hashtag Elizabeth David.
When I like looked up, when I Googled what a lot of people's favorite recipes for, they were all very meaty. Like I think Jamie Oliver had one that was like, oh no, maybe it was Hoppy. It was like chicken and tarragon or something.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of the kind of classic meat dishes, which obviously I wasn't that into, but I'm glad you found a veggie one.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. Well,
what did you cook?
Well, I made three things, but they felt two things felt very easy, quite easy. And so I was lucky enough to be on holiday last week and I was in Madeira.
Oh, yes. You have some great pictures for Instagram.
Yes.
For this episode.
Yeah. Ish, sure.
no, not of you. I mean, of your cooking.
I'm not going to be putting my holiday snaps on my
holiday. This is me drinking a cocktail by the pool.
Why, you were here for the food content? what? But I felt very led by that because I wasn't sure what I would be able to get or whatever. But then I stumbled across this amazing supermarket. And oh my God, I just love supermarkets on holiday.
I mean, they're the best.
It's just so good. There was nothing really lacking. But anyway, my courgette thing that I made was the courgette souffle.
Ooh.
Which my family were like asking what I was going to be cooking while I was on holiday in this Airbnb with like really limited equipment. Yeah. And I was like, oh, just a souffle. They were like, wow, okay, way to make it easy on yourself.
No,
like,
big deal. This.
But actually, she did make it sound quite simple. And this, so she has a recipe for mini courgette souffles just before this. And then she just says, well, you can also make them in kind of one big dish. So that's what I did. And I purchased a little €2 whisk in the supermarket. Nice. That I was thrilled with. And then just did everything in this kind of Pyrex dish, essentially.
Did you take the Pyrex dish with you?
No, it was there because I had an Airbnb. Oh. So there was a kitchen and everything. So it was pretty well stocked. She did say like the dish should have like 1.25 to 1.5 pints capacity. And I just like, I have no concept of what that is. So I was like, this will do. So basically, you make the courgettes like you did, where you slice them, salt them, put them in a colander, and then you put a weight on them and just try and get out all the water. And then you cook them this is what's strange. So you drain them, but then you cook them in some water to get them really soft. And she's like, it's imperative that you get all the water out. It's like, but you're just adding some back in.
You're rehydrating.
Yeah, but then she says you shouldn't add much more than a ladleful or whatever. So then you sieve the courgettes, so you make kind of a pulp, and you make a bechamel sauce. Why are you laughing at pulp?
No, I was thinking, do you not use a food mill to make them into a pulp? I'm also eating a shortbread.
No food mill here.
Make a joke.
Yeah, so you make a bechamel sauce as well, and you add cheese to that. And she says Gruyere, but I use some kind of like local cow's cheese that I found there that seemed legit. So you put your courgette then into that bechamel, and then on the side you whisk up some egg whites, so they're like in soft peaks.
So and your humble brag here is that you hand whisked some egg whites.
Yes,
with your €2 tiny whisk.
With my €2 tiny whisk, and then I was like, so proud of this that I took a picture of my whisk against this like lovely Madeira sunset and texted it to Vic being like, I've still got it.
And we'll put like that a knob picture up.
Absolutely.
You do still have it, and we're thank all proud you. Of you.
Thank you. No, because in the first part of Cordon Bleu, when you're doing the like basic pastry bit, they make you hand whisk everything, and there's like machines sitting around the room, and we're always like, can we just whisk them in the KitchenAid or whatever? And they're like, no, for basic everyone has to use their hands. So like, we always used to hand whisk everything, but then when you move up you get to use the machine a bit more. But yeah, so that's why I was just particularly proud that I could still do it. Anyway, you fold in these whites into your bechamel sauce, and then you put it all into your buttered Pyrex dish, as I did, and that's standing in some water in another baking dish. And then you just cook that in the oven for like 40-45 minutes. And it does puff up quite a bit, and then it doesn't really stay. Like when it comes out, it kind of like poof, comes down a little bit.
Is that your dolphin noise?
Nope. And yeah, and that was it. But it was actually, I expected it to fail massively because I wasn't really weighing anything. I was eyeballing everything and I just thought it wouldn't work. But it was actually really, really delicious. Like, it was so light. I thought maybe it would turn out a bit like a crustless quiche or whatever those depressing things are called. So bleak. But this was just lovely and light and airy. And it did, like, it felt souffle-like. I would totally make it again. I just kept going back to the dish and having more and more mouthfuls of it. It was really delicious. The cheese made it, though. I feel like without that, it wouldn't be quite as interesting. But yeah, I would recommend that.
Cheese made it might be a bad name of the week.
The cheese made it. You can also do it in like the little ramekin dishes as well. But I mean, why bother? Make it in the big one.
Yeah.
I think it was great. And alongside that, then I made, this was just a weird dinner that I put together, I made the onions stewed in wine.
Oh.
I picked this because it was simple and I thought that the ingredients would be easy to get, but also because I've made that in the Ottolenghi flavour book, Ottolenghi episode mention of the week, there's the miso onions.
Yes, the miso butter onions.
Oh my God, which are so good. Yeah. You just like mix, you just bake onions for ages in like a mix of like butter, miso and water, I think it is. And just, they are incredible when they come out. So I think I just still had that in my memory when I picked this recipe because it sounds fairly similar. A couple of concepts I wasn't quite familiar with in the intro to this recipe. One was like, this is the dish to make when you have a glass of wine to spare. Not quite sure what that is. Can't relate. But the main thing was like, or perhaps when you have been bullied or cajoled by one of the Breton onion boys into buying far more onions than you know what to do with. Is that what happened to you with your courgettes and tomatoes? You were just bullied by one of those Breton courgette boys.
I feel like Breton onion boys is actually our band name of the week.
I would be in that band and I know exactly what the uniform would be. So it's very, very simple. You peel, she says you peel 6 to 8 rather large onions, all the same size. I did just a couple. And then you put them in a thick pan with olive oil. And then when the oil is beginning to sizzle, you pour in your wine and you let it boil fiercely for a few seconds. And then you add water to come halfway up the onions and you put that in a low oven. I mean, my oven was like about waist height, so I wasn't sure. No, I genuinely didn't really know what that meant. And it was the water and the like liquid wasn't even like moving. So I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to turn that up a bit. I think I had it at like 180 or something.
Yeah.
And then to finish it off, you put it back on a fast flame for 2 or 3 minutes and you kind of reduce down the sauce. And it was nice. It was nice. I think I probably would have added a little bit more wine because you kind of lost that flavour because it had cooked out, essentially. But yeah, it was like a really simple way to do onions.
Sounds like, so you keep the onions whole?
You keep the onions whole, yeah.
It sounds like maybe the onions are too big for that. Like the recipe sounds a little bit like the winey onions that you have to make for Julia Child's beef bourguignon, which I made, but they were like tiny onions.
Tiny shallots, yeah. Yeah,
and I wonder if it would be better if they were closer to the liquid, you know?
Yeah, I did feel like there was a lot of me just trying to fix things on the spot, probably. But then I just wasn't sure because there just like weren't many measurements if I had just maybe bought onions that were a bit too big because I think I added more liquid. And then, like I said, I turned up the heat. And then there was something else as well. So I felt like a lot of it, I was just like winging it. It's like somebody said to me, you just cook the onions in wine and water. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, okay, I'll just try and do this myself. It wasn't much direction.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe this is one of the ones that just doesn't work though, a la Nige.
Maybe, or maybe one that I should be making, you know, every day this week to try and get it better.
You probably should.
But I think for an onion dish, I'm going to stick with Otto's miso onions because they're the best. If you have that flavour book, please make those miso onions. Yeah, yeah. They're so good. The last thing I made was in the dessert section.
Oh, I was hoping that you'd make a dessert.
Well, it was very simple. Two of your least favourite things. I'm going to say these words together and you're probably going to have a physical reaction. Can you guess what these things?
It's strawberries and cream.
Yeah. Strawberry cream, that's exactly what it is. Sorry.
I don't hate strawberries. I'm allergic to them.
Yes.
And I don't really like cream. So there you go. That's true.
That'll do it. Anyway.
Sorry, Les.
It's okay. I'm here for all your strawberry cream needs. You're there for the meaty stuff and the dill.
Balance each other out. Dilly meat.
This is really simple. You hull some strawberries and you sieve them to a pulp.
Pulping. You're just pulping all day long today.
Yeah, it should have been called pulping provincial cooking. Did you notice as well that she calls tuna tunny fish in this, by the way?
No.
It's the cutest
name. Tunny,
T-U-N-N-Y. T-U-N-N-Y fish. Aww, and I think I'm going to call tuna that from now on. I thought it was very cute. Anyway, sorry.
I'll be honest, it sounds kind of Irish, you know?
We cooked the tunny fish up with the potatoes.
I feel like
They weren't Cyprus potatoes, but they did all the same. So yeah, sieve the strawberries to a pulp. Like, it just extracted a lot of kind of water from the strawberry. It was just essentially made strawberry juice. So I kind of mixed some of the sieved stuff back in there, so there was some texture. And then you whisk up some double cream, and you also whisk an egg white and fold that into the double cream, which is nice. It kind of lightens it. And then you put the strawberry pulp into that cream, and then you add a little caster sugar. And then you arrange the cream piled up in a shallow bowl, and you stir in some reserved whole strawberries before serving. So it's like strawberries and cream, but just like a little bit more fancy.
Yeah.
And it was nice. I'd never done that before. I'd never folded an egg white into cream before.
Like a raw meringue.
Yeah. But speaking of meringue, that's what was really missing for me. I felt like this was like
crunch.
Good eat and miss if you had like a meringue base or something, or I just crumbled over some meringue. Yeah. Because it was missing the texture for me. Like, it was all very, very mushy. But yeah, as I've said before, the French love a mushy dessert. Well, here I am, you know, almost 24 hours later from eating a raw egg white, and I'm still alive and well.
It's fine. They're in cocktails, right? That's, you know.
It's a strawberry sour. It's absolutely fine. But yeah, that's what I made.
Cool.
I think of all of the things, I would just make the courgette souffle again. That would be the
main
thing. That
sounds very impressive, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Was there anything that you saw that you wanted to make?
The third dish I was going to make was like a lentil thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were good lentil content.
I mean, I feel like I haven't seen in French stuff before.
Yeah.
Lentils with parsley butter.
Oh, there you go. There's the parsley mention.
And it's literally, I think, just like cooked in like a stock, and then with the like parsley butter that you've made, which is a different recipe, like stirred through them. So I bet they'd be lovely.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds good.
You?
Not much. Again, I think this is one of the books, like Joy of Cooking or something, that like I'm proud to have. I like having it on my shelf, but probably won't cook from it that much. Yeah. But it's nice to browse through. It's like a window to the past. There was a chocolate and almond cake that I thought could be interesting to do. Don't love chocolate cake, but I feel like sometimes a really nice simple one is a great thing. So I was quite intrigued by that. But yeah, no, that rice and tomato salad, I kind of still just want to make to see what the deal is there. What's the dill? Sorry, there is no dill in that.
You better get there quickly, because we're fast coming out of tomato season, and I feel like otherwise raw tomato is going to taste like ass on top of your rice.
And then what will we talk about? We'll just bitch about unripe tomatoes.
Yeah, how like all these recipes we've got, I've got bloody tomatoes in there.
And it's not tomato season.
It's fine. It's about to be autumn, so we're into like squash season, which is, you know, pumpkin baby.
Pumpkin spice latte season. Shall we rate?
Should we rate this?
Oh, I didn't sing my recipe titles. I'm so sorry. Will I do it now?
Do you want to do it now, and then we'll cut them back in?
Yeah. Courgette souffle.
So you're going to do it in French?
No. Souffle au courgette.
Lovely. Lovely accent there.
Thank you. Let's rate.
Let's rate. I'll just talk a little bit about our rating system. I'll just remind you guys about our lovely rating system, which we use here on the old Poddy Pod. We rate out of 5. We have 5 different categories, and every episode we give a rating out of 5, and I'm going to say 5 at least 5 more times.
First of the 5 is second of the 5. Third of the 5. Is that your favourite boy band growing up?
You know what? It wasn't. They were fine. What? They were 5.
They were fine, 5.
Like, I liked them fine, 5.
Oh, I loved 5.
Did you? Who's your favourite?
Oh, hard to pick. I went through phases of each of them. I liked Scott with the spiky hair for a while. Fun fact, went to see 5 when I was younger, but only 2 of them showed up.
What? Why?
Yes. I don't know, something had happened.
It was like a reunion tour. It was like...
No, it was back in their heyday, back in Dublin, and my mother took me out. It was, 2 out of 5. 40% of the band was there. Anyway.
They've been, you know, down to Temple Bar the night before, and they just couldn't hack it.
Eating, drinking all those €9 pints.
Right, what am I doing? Rating.
Rating.
Rating, our five rating system. So each episode we choose a new thing to rate out of based on the chef. And we'll get to that in a minute for lovely Lizzie D, as I like to call her. But here are the five categories. I feel like I was going to go five, but the four, three,
three, two, one.
If I get in there. So, number one, usability and accessibility. That's one. Two, ingredients used. Are they easy to find? Did we manage to get good tomatoes? Aesthetics is number three. How does a book look? Number four is the book veggie friendly? And number five is inspirability. How inspired were we to cook from it? And this week, because we mentioned it a couple of times, we are going to rate this book out of parsley.
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 Curly parsley, apparently. No flat leaf here.
Flatty parsley. That's for scumbags. Only curly parsley allowed, which is exceedingly difficult to buy.
Exceedingly. Look at you getting into Elizabeth David's territory. Oh, terribly difficult to find.
Rather tough.
I had to send Jeeves to the food mill and he couldn't find the curly parsley.
The food mill sounds so, like, you know, dark.
Yeah, something from the Hunger Games.
Yeah, where they make beef mince or something. Right, Hannah, how many parsleys out of five?
Well, I think pedantic Liz would not like us pluralizing parsley, but here we are. I think you can only have
parsley plants.
Five leaves. Parsley, one parsley, two parsley, three parsley, four.
If you're getting down, baby.
I feel a great loyalty to this book and to Elizabeth David as a woman. She
okay, because of all her lovers. We should have rated out of lovers out of five.
Shit, we should have rated that. Yeah, just because my mum loved it, and I feel like there's so much love for her in the world that is probably, look at me with all my caveats. Right, I'm going to give it four. Ooh. Parsley out of five, and that is because I'm giving it points for usability, ingredients, because everything was pretty easy to find. Aesthetics, I'm going to give it one because I just like how old school it looks. Vic's making a face now. She's like, fuck off. Here you are back in your sentimental shite, back in your Nigella, five out of five.
I'm the chef with Hannah this week, not the fucking book.
I like having a nice little old book on the shelf. It looks, you know, it's nice. My spine. Victoria looks so bored, by the way. She's like twirling her hair and looking off camera. She does not want any of my shit.
I was actually thinking, look how small yours compares to mine. Mine's like 500 pages.
Yeah, so's mine.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, so the only point I was taking off was for inspirability because I didn't feel like massively blown away to want to make anything. But I'm still giving it those other 4 points because I credit Liz with doing great stuff for the British food scene, bringing veggies and apparently like tahini and stuff and everything she was into too. So
nice.
Yeah, I'm rating the chef. What are you going to do about it?
You're fired.
I know. Next week, Vic will be solo again.
I'm bringing Scott from Five.
Chat's better than me anyway. How many parsleys are you giving this out of five?
I am not being as generous as you.
I know.
But not by much. I'm only going to give it three.
Okay.
It's the same as you, but it's dropping the aesthetics point.
Right, yeah.
It's a lot of words. And a lot of words I didn't really want to read about. So I'm giving it three parsley. Or
three parsley.
Parsleys. Three lovers out of five.
Three parsley lovers
out of five. It drops for aesthetics, it drops for inspirability. You know, if you asked me before we did this book, I would have expected to drop one for veggie friendly as well. Again, it's not suitable for vegans.
No, but no French cooking
but
is.
Lots of vegetable stuff. You know, I made two vegetarian dishes.
I wonder how easy it's going to be for a vegan to do our next book.
Ooh, what a transition. But how easy will it be?
Do you want to tell us about the next book?
No. yeah, actually, I do fucking want to tell you about it. So, excitingly, our next episode is not a French book.
Nope.
And it is a baking book.
Woo!
Which we're both excited about. And it is Baking From My Home to Yours by Dori Greenspan.
I'm going to call this the Ted Lasso of the cookbook world because it's so wholesome looking.
So
and just
wholesome.
Like, so pure.
This fucking recipe for Ted Lasso biscuits is biscuits.
Biscuits.
Going to American already. I'm losing it.
We both lost it.
Doy Greenspan, baking from my home to yours. Yeah. Very wholesome. Very. A lot of, like, you know, I've said it before and I've said it again. I love feeling like the pioneer woman. And I feel like this is going to make me feel like the pioneer woman. I think it's going to make me feel like the pioneer woman. But it might make me feel like the pioneer woman.
Whole different thing. Yeah, I feel like Doy Greenspan is well loved, isn't she, in America?
Yeah.
I'm interested to see what she's like. Oh, God, it's going to be full of cops, isn't it? Oh, it's going to be full of cops. Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway. Can't wait to bake. I've seen lots of muffins.
I feel like already feel inferior.
No.
To you because
no,
you're a
no,
baker.
I'm not that good. No, I'm really, really mediocre. Don't worry.
She says, having told you how she whipped up some fucking egg yolks earlier by hand with a tiny 2 euro.
That has nothing to do with my cooking skill, but my excellent muscle strength.
She's been working out.
Wow, we really have to go now.
Yeah, we do. I've got a lot of dissertation to write.
We've really digressed. You
know, Ted Lasso biscuits to eat.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. We love you.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review as it helps others to find us. You can see how the recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, please don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.